Mr. George Lemburn, how are
JP,
you? Yeah,
how you doing?
very good, thanks. Everyone listening and watching, welcome to another episode of the Live Your Full Potential podcast. Today I have someone that less than a year ago I didn't even know existed in the world, and today we're good friends as well as partners in something very cool that we're building together, Mr. George Lemburn, from this side of the world in Thailand, Bangkok. Thanks for coming on, bro.
Ah, it's a pleasure. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
As always, my idea for these episodes are inspirational conversations with inspirational people, not because of what they're doing, just because of who they're being. And because they are the person that they are, for some reason, they've come into my life. So there's no script here. We're just going to go with it, go with the flow, wing it, so to speak. Whereas some people might think that's unprofessional, it's just how I like to do things. I want it to be flowing. I want it to be natural. And I want it to feel like we are having a coffee conversation where you are just listening in to us sitting over a cup of coffee in either Phuket or Bangkok or Dubai, wherever. Plug us in your headphones and have a listen. And I hope that our time together in this episode is valuable to you. George, why don't you share a little bit about yourself as the spiritual entrepreneur, YouTuber, globetrotter, traveler, blogger, vlogger, marketer? There's so many different elements to who you are. I'd love to get you to do an actual intro.
Absolutely. So, I suppose a little bit about me is at the time of the recording, I'm 33 years old. I am from London, England. So, I left school. I didn't go to university or anything like that. I actually worked for a couple of years with special needs kids. And then I left that and started working in construction. And then just sort of ended up embarking on a bit of a dead end life path that was just menial jobs I didn't enjoy, didn't like. I was deeply unhappy, very depressed, very angry, very jealous, very insecure. And I just sort of got myself into a rhythm of life that was very counterproductive to general flourishing. I'd got myself into copious amounts of debt. I had a 248 credit score. I was sleeping on couches and yeah, just sort of hit a bit of a rock bottom. But obviously, the great thing about that is the only way is up. So then slowly started to curate a life that I really wanted to live. And that followed a few different steps and stages. So I decided to quit the jobs that I was in. I was a recruitment consultant at the time, and I moved into e-commerce. And that was where I first discovered the ability to make money for myself. And that was a really, really fun journey. So that was my entrance into the world of drop shipping. I ended up building some large fitness brands on there. I sort of pioneered the sort of Instagram outreach at scale way probably about 6 years ago. I ended up going to America and teaching for a couple of years over there how to do this method of building ambassadors. And yeah, it's all sort of snowballed on from there, really. I've had marketing agencies. I've been head of marketing at some quite aggressively scaling tech companies. And then around 18 months ago, I decided to leave the UK and move to Thailand. So I'm currently in Bangkok, where I'm speaking to you, I'm speaking from now. And really, that was the culmination of the desire that had really planted itself in my mind about 7 years ago. So I first read the or listen to the 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And that was just really paradigmatic for me. It opened up a whole new way to see the world. And ever since then, I sort of had in my mind that I wanted to have more freedom and flexibility in my life. And really that culminated in, as I said, me 18 months ago, moving to Thailand. And when I did that, I started a YouTube channel called Tripping with George, and I've been doing a few vlogs and things like that. So yeah, I mean, that's, I suppose, a little bit about me and a little bit about my background. I always find questions like that interesting, because when I listen to podcasts and I hear people talk about that, there's always the part of you that thinks, well, you know, do I really care about that person's backstory? And you know what really the interest is in, where is there a mutual resonance between the listener and the person talking about their backstory? And I think the thing that's useful in maybe my backstory is that, you know, it's a very average life. It is very average. I didn't go to university. I earned minimum wage when I left school. I worked in construction jobs. I was generally very miserable, and it took work and, it took work over time to get to the point where I am in my life now. And yeah, for whatever work that is.
Yeah, I think sharing your story is probably one of the most powerful things you can do. And that's why I continue to do it in my life. And, if someone could be watching or listening to this thinking, if you didn't share your story and we just went straight into Tim Ferriss, spiritual entrepreneurship, living in Thailand, you might get someone saying, oh, it's easy for you, but when you share, oh, I did this and then I changed and then I had this business and then I decided to do something else, or I worked in construction before, someone might go, oh, you know what? There's a bit of me in that story. And as soon as they recognize that there's a bit of them in that story, it allows them to listen to you or give themselves permission to listen to you. Because I've seen many speakers speak where they don't, whether on podcasts or stages or online webinars, where they don't share their story well enough. And people just switch off because they're sitting there with beads or whatever around their neck. And they're like, who the hell is this guy? Or who's this woman? Yeah. But it's important to, as one of my teachers always says, Lisa Nichols, she always says, stand on your story, not in your story. And you tell it very well from that perspective, that it's not, I'm not in my story, I'm on my story. I'm looking back at my story with hindsight. Saying that, I would love to ask you, looking back at your entire story up until now, what have you learned? Like, if you had to tell me in 1 to 3 sentences, what have you learned as a result of everything that you've gone through? And maybe to give you a or ask a better question, as a result of your entire story so far, what really matters to you?
That's a great question. So there were a few pivotal things which I discovered very early on in my transformation, which changed everything for me. And one of them was when I read Unlimited Power by Tony Robbins. And there was a few
No
nuggets.
way. You didn't tell
Yeah,
me that.
when
That's cool, man.
oh, there was a few things. And one of the takeaways was that nothing has any meaning except the meaning that you give it. And
Amen.
that was unbelievably powerful for me, because what we do is, by habit, we assign meaning to almost anything that happens. This person said this, therefore they mean that. But what I discovered was that was a jump that I was making that existed only in my mind. And that was a jump I didn't need to make. And that jump was causing so much suffering in my life. So the ability to strip everything around me of its meaning and then reframe it. So to change the way I was looking at things. And I know that Tony Robbins says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So when I realized that I could strip everything of its meaning and I had the ability to reframe the way in which I approach that thing, suddenly the worst thing in my life could become the greatest opportunity to do this thing. Now, the event isn't any different. The only thing that's different is how I'm now viewing the event and how empowered that now makes me through this new reframing. So they were two really, really powerful things there, which then really set me up on my journey. And I think a very large part of that, the next thing that I'd say, is when I picked up meditation. Because for a long time, I'd been a huge victim to my emotions and a huge victim to my thoughts. And there's up until a certain point, certainly for me, prior to when I began meditation, you are entirely identified with your thought stream. There's no differentiation between who I am and what my thoughts are. And then when I started meditating over time, I gradually regained the ability to watch my thoughts, and I could see how they were either empowering me or disempowering me. And that provided me with a new strength, or a new found sense of free will that I didn't have prior to when I began meditating, because I'd moved from the victim of my own thoughts to now the witness of my own thoughts, and I had more freedom over how to act. So they were
Which
some
then
things.
links to creating your own meaning as well.
Yes, exactly. And because then, well, the more that you can observe these thoughts that are happening, the more that you can assign meaning to it, reframe it, and you've just got more power over your mind. And if I look back on my story, I can see that those two things, in terms of stripping things of its meaning and reframing the things that happened and starting meditation, were really the two things which changed the trajectory of my life. And in terms of what matters to me right now, really what matters to me right now is truth. Truth is a big, big part of where I am and who I am. And I know the things that we talk about, a lot of it is based around purity. You know, what's the purest exchange? What's the purest thing here? And I think for me, that focus on truth and the pursuit of purity is really a large part of my life right now.
Amazing. For someone that is so reflective and introspective as you, is it okay for the listener? Is it okay to one, not know your truth? Obviously, kind of know what you're going to say, but I want them to hear it from you because I don't want them to feel like it's only my perspective. Is it okay to not know your truth? And then once you feel you've figured it out, is it normal to get lost in I guess your truth, your purpose, what you stand for, and then have to reinvent yourself again? And how many times is it okay to do that?
So I definitely think that truth is a process of discovery, and I think you can determine how close or far away you are from living your truth based on how much suffering you have in your life. Truth to me, you know, it's very interesting. There was a conversation that I heard, and it almost split my psyche in two. It was a conversation between
Or
Jordan Peterson.
recently. Okay.
It was about 4 years ago. So I'd already been working on myself, and I was on the way. I put it out 5 years ago, actually, and it was a conversation between Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris, and they discussed what is truth, what is the meaning of truth. And there was this difference between something being factually correct and something being true. And it was the difference almost between fact and wisdom. And that almost blew me apart, because up until that point, I hadn't been able to discern the difference between objective facts and true wisdom. And what that allowed me to do was sort of connect with a part of myself which was more in tune with truth. Now, this again really touches on meditation, because the reason that I started meditating was because I thought it would be useful. I would hear Ray Dalio talk about it when he was releasing his book Principles, and I thought, right, let me start meditating because this is going to be useful for me. Because I can see how all these successful people meditate, and it's going to allow me to make better decisions, be less emotionally reactive, blah, blah, blah. And it does all of those things. But after a certain period, you realize that there's a deeper truth component to what you're tapping into when you're meditating and when you're in that. So that just allowed me to connect with a deeper part of myself that was more connected to my truth and living a true life. Truth, I think, something that I personally find quite complex, because it almost seems like the way. The truth is the path, and you don't know if you're on it or you're off of it. And it's a very difficult thing. And it's almost like the same way that the birds would instinctively know to migrate in certain seasons, or a moth might be attracted to a flame. I think that we're inherently pulled to our deepest truth in the same way. And it's just a matter of time and how much suffering you're going to go through until you start living, you know, in that deeper sense of truth that you have for yourself.
That's beautiful, man. And yeah, I totally agree. I think we are, if we slow down enough, example, again, through meditation, you will be naturally pulled to your truth. And that is why people that generally meditate, whether it's just sitting with themselves and their breath or going levels deeper with plant medicine, when people go to their subconscious, their superconscious, they start to question everything in their life, because if you're not living your truth, you're living a lie and you can't ignore your own awareness. So once you start meditating and you realize that there is a better path or a different path for me, that awareness itself and not acting on that awareness can create suffering. Do you
Yeah,
agree with that?
100%, 100%.
Like,
Because
have you, yeah. You go.
I was going to say, yeah, because I mean, it's in that stillness that the true wisdom arises. When we switch from looking outside for answers to looking inside for answers, then we can generally make much better decisions, at least from our own emotional standpoint.
You said something similar to this, but I'll use my words for it, that true knowledge is, sorry, there is a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Like wisdom is the real knowledge. You can have knowledge, but it's not always enough. Skills aren't enough. Facts aren't enough. What is really going to get you to the truth or as close to the truth as possible is wisdom. And that is an experiential process, gaining wisdom. You can't read it in a book. You can't listen to a speaker and say, "Oh, I have wisdom now." You have to experience it for yourself. And as Buddha said, I guess 2,600 years ago, he said, "Don't take my word for it. Come experience it for yourself." When I ordained as a monk for a very short time, 2 years ago, when I came out, I told the monks, some of them that you have met, they said, "What are you going to take from this experience?" And I said that everything comes after meditation. And if there was one thing that we could encourage people to do after listening to this episode, I really, really, and by the way, my funny accent, I mean Really, really. I hope that we can encourage you to meditate. And it's the reason why you and I are doing something together called the Spiritual Gym, which is to encourage people to do reps, not just physically and mentally for their confidence, but for their spirit. And one way to build reps and go to the Spiritual Gym is meditation. How have you found your meditation journey? Some people have found it incredibly difficult. Some people have fallen into it really easy. Were there levels, were there pivotal points in your meditation journey to where you are now, which is someone that is a very advanced level meditator? You attend retreats, you've sat with plant medicine, you go to regular meditations on a weekly basis, you're part of meditation communities. Tell us a bit about your meditation journey, where it started, and a bit more about where it is now.
Definitely. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a process and it's something that you get better with over time, exactly like any other form of exercise. So, when I started off with, apps, Headspace app, I think it is. And then, yeah, that was a great way to start. But so
I
that
started with Headspace and then I just
was.
found the voice too annoying.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So you start with the guided and it keeps you on track because you don't know how to meditate at first. So these apps are great enablers to do that. So I started with the Headspace app and then eventually moved to just sort of doing it by myself and occasionally would dip in and out of different apps. I mean, Sam Harris's Waking Up app is fantastic. But certainly at the beginning, you're not meditating, you're just thinking with your eyes shut, and then gradually you get a little bit better, and maybe you
I
count to
like
two
that.
without
Thinking
thinking.
with
And
your eyes shut. Yeah.
and then you start to realize what actually meditating is when you are sort of connecting with that deeper sense of self, and you're not identified with the thought stream anymore. You're now the witness of the thought stream. And so yeah, it's really progressed over time. And yeah, so it started with 10 minutes a day guided to sort of 10 to 20 minutes a day not guided, and then all the way up to now where, like you said, I've attended retreats where we meditate for 4 or 5 hours a day, sit with plant medicine, meditating with different communities, and really working up. And your life reaps the benefits in proportion to the amount of meditation that you do. So of course, if you've got certain goals, meditating for 12 hours a day might not be integral. It might not take you further across those different areas of your life. But certainly, if you meditate for 30 minutes a day versus 10 minutes a day, the actual benefits of the meditation will probably be more than 3x because it's almost asymmetrical in terms of the growth that you get and the compounding effect that you get from the time invested into meditation. And yeah, it's the single thing that I would recommend most to anybody. The biggest jump that I think anybody can make in their lifetime to reduce their suffering is to move away from the identification of their thought stream to the witness of their thoughts. And that jump alone is just potentially the most empowering jump you could make in your entire life.
Powerful words, brother. Powerful words. And I totally agree with everything that you said. You call yourself a spiritual entrepreneur, or at least that's what it says in your bio. What does that mean? I know what that means, but I want people getting to know you to understand what that means. Because for me, my understanding of that is you're an entrepreneur. You're really good at what you do in your lane and marketing and sales and project, I guess, overseeing projects. But also the spiritual side of why we should be in business, you're very focused on that as well. So what does spiritual entrepreneurship mean to you?
Sure. So this is something that I struggled with initially, to try to grasp this positioning. And it stems from an initial conflict I had between deviation, adaptation, and ignorance. And what I mean by this is the truth or the Dharma is unchanging. But from the time of the Buddha, for example, there's many different offshoots of teachings. You've got Mahayana Buddhism, then you've got Vajrayana Buddhism, and then you've got Theravada Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism. So you've got all these different offshoots. And I try to understand if these were adaptations to how the message could be shared based on the time and place where they were, or were they deviations from the core teachings of the Buddha? And what I eventually came to see was that they were more adaptations. They were still sharing the transmission of the knowledge, but they were being adapted to fit the time and place from which they were in. And then I started thinking about ignorance. And this sort of followed me up to the present day, where I was thinking, well, you see lots of very, very big spiritual organizations and communities, ones that are really the flagship organizations, who are doing very, very badly at propagating their message. And we never want to deviate from the teachings, but the teachings, the vehicle for communicating the teachings, weren't adapting for the times that they were in. And what I saw was that that was a form of ignorance, because the people who work in these organizations, the people who share these messages, are ignorant about the change that's happening in society. And the risk of that is that the deepest teachings of spirituality will be lost. So with that in mind, that gave me the sense of peace of mind that to pursue entrepreneurial success within a spiritual space was valid, because I had to be very self-reflective and very self-aware about where I might be deceiving myself about my own self-interest for wanting to be a spiritual entrepreneur. But at the same time, acknowledging the ignorance that exists in the marketplace from other people and how I can help them overcome that ignorance, and as a result, help adapt the way in which the teachings, the deepest teachings of existence, can be heard by more people. So that was the internal sort of conflict or battle that I was having. And in terms of being a spiritual entrepreneur, this really comes down to two things. One of those is the way in which I try to approach business from my own standpoint. And then the other is how I try to conduct business. So in terms of how I approach business, these are things like trying not to be attached to the outcome. So, you know, because if I'm attached to the outcome, it's going to cause suffering. If I desire a certain thing to happen in my business, then that's also going to cause me suffering. If I take pride in a certain level of progress and that builds up my ego, again, that's conflicted to the spiritual part. So there's many ways in which I need to incorporate my spiritual practice, spiritual progress into the way I feel internally as an entrepreneur. But also there's the way in which you deliver and interact with the marketplace. And there's a few key things here, one of which is intention. There's a really great story that Ram Dass shared where he was playing Frisbee with a kid. And then he remembered the writing on Gandhi's headstone, which said, think of the poorest person you've ever met and think if the next action you do will help them. So do you throw the Frisbee or not? And it becomes a very hard thing to do. So all you can do is deeply connect with the intention. So if your intention is pure to deliver great value that is going to benefit people, then you can do that in a from a spiritual place. Then there's also the fact that you acknowledge that you're in a cause and effect universe. Everything that we do is a cause and effect and a cause and effect. So the things that we do have effects on everybody around us. So we have to be mindful about the way that we do that. And we live in a world where marketing pulls on your weaknesses. It amplifies certain feelings to try and make certain actions happen. And there is a big, big issue, I think, in the marketplace where greed surpasses and causes an overreach of what's necessary. And that causes poisonous messaging. And I think the
When you say an overreach of what's necessary, what do you mean by that?
So we live in a very consumerist society where we completely overconsume in a way that's detrimental both to the environment as well as our own subjective happiness and collective happiness. So the moment we overreach and we're consumed by greed through the erroneous notion that having more will make us more, then we overreach. And when the moment we overreach, because it's I believe that as being in spiritual entrepreneurship, it's okay to reach and it's okay to sharpen the blade. But in the Tao Te Ching, they say if you sharpen the blade too much, it loses its edge. And that's why I think it's okay to reach. But when you overreach, that's where it then becomes negative. And I think the last thing, the thing that I really like about spiritual entrepreneurship as a path is the way in which we can deeply connect with how we are the vehicle through which the unmanifest becomes manifest. So there is a process through which that which does not exist comes into material existence. And we can be the vehicle through which that thing happens. And that's a very, very fun, creative process where we can take an idea and then we can see the idea through to its actualization and manifestation in the marketplace. And I think that's a very exciting thing indeed.
Yeah, becoming the wizard in your life.
Mm.
And that is incredibly spiritual. You know, it requires visualization, belief, being able to see it in your mind so that you're able to believe it, so that you can actually see it on the external. So essentially seeing it on the internal so that you can eventually see it on the external. There's so much there that I wanted to ask you a question on, but I'm going to go to something that I feel will really be valuable to the community that you are in with me. And that is on the concept of giving. I know that you talk about giving a lot. It's also one of your current non-negotiables is to, you can use your own words, but something to do with giving something randomly or doing a random act of kindness, etc. Many people actually struggle to give because they feel like it one-ups themselves against the person that they're giving to. Does that make sense? It's like, oh, I'm better than you. Here's a bit of help, you know?
Yeah.
But also they don't know how to approach it. Having giving being something as part of your, I guess, everyday life, can you share a little bit about how you give, how you find opportunities to give? And just before you answer that, giving is the antidote for people listening and watching for greed. Because even in business, when I have gone most wrong in my life, it's because I'm trying to get. And when things in life and business are going really well for me, it's because I'm in the energy of giving. So this is why I've asked you this question, or asked George this question, because you want to get yourself into the energy of selfless giving, or as George mentioned, purity, the purity of giving without expectation, without needing to receive anything back. There is so much joy to be found in it. And like I said, it's a part of your life. Can you talk a little bit about giving, what it makes you feel before, during, and after, and how people can create opportunities in their life to give more so that it changes the way they feel about themselves, others, business, and the world?
I would love to. So yes, it is one of my commitments at the moment to gift something to a stranger with no expectation of getting anything in return. And it is now probably one of the highlights of my day. So some examples of what I've done recently is me and my girlfriend, we've got quite a big following on TikTok. And one of the followers had mentioned that her husband had been diagnosed with a brain disease and he had to have some time off of work, but the employer only spoke English. So I wrote them a letter on behalf of his partner, asking the boss to give him a couple of months off so that he could recover. And, you know, for me, that takes 5 minutes. But the difference it could make to them is significant. And that's just one example. But things like that don't necessarily spring up often. And my general, I've got a backup. And I usually do it first thing in the morning so that I can make sure that I do it, is when I go to 7-Eleven and I get my drinks for the day, I get a drink for a stranger. And I always get a vitamin drink or a juice drink or something like that, because I don't think you want to poison someone with your gift. You know, you get them a full sugar Coke, you know, here's your gift of, you know, diabetes. I think it should be.
Yeah, that's where I think people struggle. It's like, what do I get someone? And is it really going to change their life? But right, if it's a health product of any kind, just by giving it to them, it's helping them already. That's a great 100%. Share.
And it's so easy to do because it costs you, what, 50p? So, I mean, it's not a lot of money at all. You know, exactly. It's really not a lot. And it's a process. The entire thing is a process of self-discovery, because when you're buying the drink, you're buying a drink for the stranger at the table, because there's no one in that. So you're buying a drink for someone sitting in a metaphorical seat, but there's no one in that seat. So you're buying it for someone who doesn't exist yet. So it's a very interesting process of buying something, not knowing who it's going to go to, because you're just getting it, knowing it's going to go to someone, but you've got no idea who that's going to be. And then there's the whole process of actually exchanging the money for the thing. So I think a large part of why people don't do it, and why I didn't do it for a long time, was because I think that a lot of people live from a place of fear. And we try to hold. We try to hold what you've got, even if it's 50p or a pound a day, you know, or a dollar. We try and hold it because we don't want to lose it. But the very act of trying to hold on to something creates this process of fear and lack in your life. And just being entirely open with just giving away a small amount of money every day is so lightening in terms of your psychological attachment to even the smallest amount of money. You know, if someone took a pound out of your pocket, it would really upset you. So we have this relationship with money, no matter how big or small, that it takes, that this is an opportunity for us to work on. So you buy the drink for the complete stranger, or, you know, with the mind of knowing we have no idea who it's going to go to. We say goodbye to the money, so we're dealing with the fear. And then there's actually giving it to the person. And sometimes I might give it to a homeless person on the street. Sometimes I might give it to the nice people that work in the condo building where I live, or it might just be someone randomly, you know, walking along. And the issue is that I think a lot of people have with it, and that I had, was that it had to be deeper than it was, right? Because we're thinking, how would we judge somebody who did that to us? And all the time we're projecting and fearing how we're going to be judged by the other person. But when you can just drop that and just selflessly give and just say, here it is, just give it to them, make eye contact, show that this is just a gesture, just here you are, and then go. And then the battle continues. Then you've got the battle of, oh, look at me. You know, I'm such a good dude. You know, I'm like a saint. Do you know what I mean? Look at me giving away a drink a day. And then that becomes a battle as well of just where your ego becomes inflated, where you think you do all this great stuff. And so just the very act of just giving something for a stranger in a day provides countless opportunities for your own self-discovery and your own self-improvement.
And your own spiritual development. So true. It's like you could go away after the experience. Great, amazing, beautiful share, by the way. You can go away after every giving experience and ask yourself, just kind of being the observer, how did that feel before? Oh, it felt uncomfortable. You know, go a bit deeper into that. Why did it feel uncomfortable? Or how did it feel during? Or how did I feel after? Oh, I felt terrible before and during, but after I felt fucking amazing. Oh, interesting. Why is that? You know, and that is the work. That is the work for you to do. Because essentially, if we're all living from a place of purity, from a place of being healed, we are all naturally human beings, compassionate. We are all naturally, as human beings, we're compassionate. So we should be able to naturally give and share anything with anyone with it feeling good before, during, and after. So whatever gap there is where between where you are now and where you want to be, that is the spiritual work. But yeah, beautiful share, man.
Love that. Thank you.
So to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but still related very much to what you do and what makes you George Lamburn. I read one of your posts recently on, I think it was LinkedIn, and how you shared that a lot of people's hesitation around, or a lot of people's suffering around posting online has nothing to do with the post. It has everything to do with the hesitation around the post. I would love you to just share a little bit more about that, because my audience, clients, students, and the community that we're both in have goals and non-negotiable targets to post every day. Yet probably, I would say less than 80% of people actually that have a goal to post every day don't post every day, when it's so simple. And I'm not sitting here on a pedestal, you know, I don't get it right. But the reason why I'm asking you this question is because I resonated with your post so much. It's in the hesitation of doing it, whether it's a post, a quote, a video, whatever, a reel, you just think about it too much. And clearly you found some clarity in that in a way that it was helpful and valuable to others. Can you share more?
I'd love to. So, yeah, I mean, I for a long time was the same. I didn't post anything anywhere, knowing that
I've
I
noticed
should.
on your Instagram, you've got barely any posts.
You know, I don't post on Instagram really, but then on LinkedIn, you know, I'll spray and pray all day. I'll go on threads and then I'll put out, full YouTube videos as well. So it's interesting. Because everything is an opportunity to grow and learn more about ourselves. And every time we do or don't post, it's always, again, giving us feedback for the work that we need to do. So if I am about to post or I want to post and don't, what's happening at that time? And generally, the internalizations are along the lines of judgment. So am I going to be judged? What are people going to think? I've got friends on here, family on here. You know, they're going to think that I'm desperate. They're going to think I'm doing this. They're going to judge me. So all of that's happening. Then you've got the logical justifications for why you shouldn't post. Oh, I need to post things that are extremely valuable. I need to post things that are some form of crappy industry trends that no one cares about, right? As in, we provide these logical justifications for why we aren't posting. And these are all just barriers to doing the thing. And the barrier to the thing is often the work. And that's why I said the suffering lies in the barrier to the thing, not doing the thing itself. Writing a LinkedIn post or a post on social media and posting it has no inherent suffering. It has no inherent subjective pain. All of the pain, all of the discomfort, and all of the reasons why you don't do it They're all psychological and spiritual problems that you need to work on and move past. So posting on social media is an opportunity for you to grow, because it provides the opportunity for you to write the post and think, how do I feel? Do I feel like I'm going to be judged? Do I feel scared? You know, what's going to happen? And again, you know, the reason that we feel these judgments from other people is because we're judging other people. We're just feeling them projected back on ourselves, you know, back onto ourselves. And again, then again, it's an ongoing process of, I feel judged, therefore I'm not posting. Why do I feel judged? Because I'm judging other people. And so, but I don't want to judge other people, and I don't want to be judged, so I can drop the suffering. So when it comes to actually doing the post, the easiest and best thing I've found is to sit and write the first thing that comes into your mind, the first relatively substantial thing, and just write it down and just have it there, and then flesh it out. And then when you feel that you're relatively happy, just click post. Now, a few little tricks here is to use Parkinson's law to your advantage, because I've seen people, they'll sit there and they'll take an hour to write a post. Set a timer of 3 minutes and just see what you can do in Wow. 3 minutes, and set yourself a challenge to go from idea to clicking post in under 180 seconds. And you would be amazed at what an effectively good thing you can write in under 3 minutes. And it's just like a muscle. Some days where I don't feel like I have much to say, I'll just post something like, I'm just posting this post so I can keep training my posting muscle. Because the longer I go without posting, the more the resistance builds up. Whereas if I post every day or two times a day, pressing post means nothing to me. It has no weight. So sometimes I just want to keep pressing post so that the resistance doesn't build up in my mind.
That is so good, what you just shared. I don't even know if you know it yourself, because obviously fitness, pretty much everyone in the world can relate to fitness. And it's just common sense, or as we say in one of our videos, fucking obvious. That if you went to the gym every day, after 7 days, going to the gym would become very easy. But if you tried to go to the gym every day and failed most days, it'll only become more difficult. It doesn't stay the same. We get good at whatever we practice, but that works both on an upwards trajectory and also on a downwards trajectory. So the more you say you're going to post and you don't do it, that's great timing for me as well, because I've been taking a little break from social media, a purposeful break that I've absolutely loved, because I've just kind of been serving my clients. But now, as you know, we're working on launching the school gym, the spiritual gym in the next few days. Probably it'll be launched by the time this episode goes out, I think. And now it's time for me to get back on social media. And I love that. I'm just looking for the post. You know, it's kind of like in sales training that, or I'm looking to press post as opposed to what I've got to write, this. No, you're just looking to press post. And for me, one of my greatest skills, even if I do say so myself, is speaking without a script, speaking naturally, speaking authentically from the heart. And really, that doesn't require anything, just to press record and go. So I'm going to use that. And, you know, in sales training, they say, it's so difficult for people to pick up the phone. But if you say your only goal today is to get a no, then it makes it a lot easier to pick up the phone. So it's like, how can you get yourself to act on this as easy as possible? Whether it's meditation, doing a sales call, posting, it's how can I make the tick, the accomplishment, so easy? And it's just press the post button once a day. That's super fucking easy. So I'm sure that's valuable to many people listening. And I can't wait to go live and to be back in the social media game, because I feel like I've had a break for months, but it's only been like Not even 2 weeks.
Well, I've missed your content. You're one of the few people whose content I actually consume on social
Well, dude, I
media.
really appreciate that, because I have to be, being fully transparent. A lot of the time, because I don't have followers like everyone else at the current moment, I'm like, man, is what I share even valuable? Sometimes I honestly ask myself that. And maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't. But it doesn't have to be five tips, secrets, hints. Sometimes people just want to share your life with you because maybe they are interested in what you're doing, or they resonate with something that you do in your life, or like you shared so well a few times, maybe they react to something that you say and they realize that, oh, this is my spiritual work to do. But yeah, a few people have messaged me going, are you okay? Like, is everything good? Like, I miss your content. So yeah, appreciate it, man. I'm coming back, coming back.
Nice. And again, just on that, sometimes we think about what's the right thing to say when all we need to do is simply show what we're doing. Because sometimes showing what we're doing can say more than any words could,
So I
you
want
know?
to respectfully jump in there because you shared something with me in January when we were on my meditation retreat together. And I just kept seeing you like we were doing a tour of the facility, going to the meditation hall, the rooms. And you just like, for the people on video, you can see me, but for the people on audio, I'm just holding up my phone at my kind of chest height. But you would just be doing this the whole time we're walking. And I'd be like, what are you doing? Do you like just content? And you're like, anytime you're doing anything is an opportunity to get content. And it's so true because in some of your videos, you maybe talk for like 10 seconds and then it just breaks to like 3 minutes of a soundtrack with all of these videos from you walking, traveling, being by the beach, sitting with your partner, eating meals. And yeah, it really made me look at it really did help me with my own, I guess, resilience muscle around putting out content, and that it's not what you say. It's just sometimes people just want to see what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And
And
TikTok's, yeah, sorry, TikTok's interesting on that one because you can just li literally just leave your phone on, and some of the biggest followed people in Asia and in Thailand should put the phone on the corner while they're cooking. They don't even talk to the bloody screen and they just eat their food and cook their food and they've got like millions of followers. It blows my mind. It's bizarre. It's
TikTok's a
bizarre.
wild place to be. TikTok is wild. I mean, we've got, we're going viral at the moment on
Yeah,
a couple.
what's your TikTok handle?
So me and my girlfriend, it's Nant and George. So
Yeah.
Nat and George, George. And yeah, we've got pretty big follower base in Burma and Thailand. So I mean, even yesterday I've got on the BTS to head somewhere and someone comes over, hey, is that you? Can oh my gosh.
No way, BTS is like the rail metro.
Yeah, I mean we'll get
You're a
stopped.
celebrity.
And we get stopped for selfies. I mean, if we go shopping or anything. So
That is
it's
crazy. Because
crazy.
what are you on now? Like 100,000 followers?
About 300. Yeah, but I mean,
Wow.
315, 316. So,
And you
and
think
so
it's mostly Thailand?
mostly Thai. So we've got people from all over. We've got people in Korea, Singapore, China, but majorities in Burma and Thailand. And what's crazy is that it's a highly concentrated demographic. So if you're looking at, say, Burmese people between the demographics of like 16 to 30, you're talking about percentages of the entire demographic following us, which is, quite significant.
Yeah.
And it's a wild, wild place. But yeah, on the content side of things, I think two things. One, I was given a very good bit of advice by a friend, Alex, and he said you can never go back and record the thing. Sometimes you don't always feel like talking. You don't always want to get the camera out and talk to the camera. But what you can do is just get the content and then you can talk over later on. And that often works a lot better because there'll probably be a time in the next week you don't mind just whipping the phone out and talking into the camera and talking about what you were doing. But maybe in that moment you didn't feel like getting the phone out and talking to it and all that. But you can't go back and record the content. You're only there once. And for the sake of, 30 seconds, capturing something, that then becomes part of the story that you can show later on. And if you see the way that content's going now, podcasts were no video, then podcasts became video, and now podcasts are becoming this highly edited thing,
Documentary,
yeah, documentary style thing. So, and the video editors do all that, but then it's on us as the individuals with the phones just to capture the content so that we can then pass that over to the fantastic editors who can create the awesome content. And another thing is, I think with your content in particular, I think I shared this with you before, is that when I first saw your content, I didn't like you, because the way that you were living your life was showing me the ways I wasn't living my life. And I heard Xihang Yi say, the brighter you shine, the more shadows you cast. And I really liked that, because when I'd seen your content, you were living in Thailand, you're an ordained monk, you're into fitness, you got tattooed, like, as in, if there was a, into entrepreneurship, right? High performance coach. I love coaching. So if there was anybody I should have liked, it was you. So why would did I have a negative reaction at the beginning? And that's only because of the ways in which I wanted to turn away from how I wasn't reaching my full potential. And luckily, I'd done the work to recognize that. So the moment I recognized that, it was right, it's a follow, right? You run the retreat, right? I'm right there. We hop on one call, boom, done. I'll send you the money, I'm in. And yeah, and now we're good friends, and we're working together, and it's awesome. And but that wasn't by anything that you said, it was by how you lived your life.
Wow, that's fucking powerful, dude.
And
That really influences me to get out of my way and create more content. And quick side notes, thank you for sharing that, George. But George has actually been helping me quite a lot. He's really good at systems, processes, simplifying things in business. And George is like, dude, just pull out your phone whenever you're doing anything and get your assistant to do a Google Drive and just send the footage to Google Drive. And I mean, literally takes seconds. And now there must be, like, in the last, I don't know what it's been, 2, 3 weeks, there must be 100 pieces of content, everything from me in my car, riding through the jungle, on my motorbike, on my bicycle, at home, swimming, working out. 100 pieces of content, maybe 5, 10, 15 seconds long each, that just didn't exist. Because, like you said, I would have on my own felt like, oh, what am I saying here? What's the message? But I'm not thinking long term. I'm not thinking the big game, which is this can be used as just B-roll. This is can be used as part of the story, can be used to explain something that you're saying in the future. And I love what you just shared. You'll only be there once.
That's it. You can't go back. You can't go back and do it.
You can't
And
go back.
yeah, man, in terms of the process, we nailed it down. Like I say, it was just everywhere you go, capture a bit of content, upload it to Google Drive, and then your VA comes in and moves it into the relevant folders, home life, jungle, workout, this, that, meditation. They move it into the right thing, then the video editor can come in and just dush, 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 pull it all out. And then all of your future videos, they've got the content there, and you don't need to do anything. The barrier to entry was so low. It was phone out, hit record, 10 seconds, push, done.
Appreciate your amazing answers, dude. Let's move to Thailand, to kind of as a segue, let's move to Thailand. Get it? Because we
Love
both have.
it.
That was a mistake, but a fun one. Just to as a segue to go back to what you just shared before, and whether I'm right or wrong, it doesn't really matter. What matters is just that this has come up for me as something in my own consciousness. And it's that I think a lot of people back in the UK, where I built my life and my career, are jealous of me. I really believe that, dude. And I've never shared this before, because here's what happened. When I was in the UK, surrounded by people in the UK, I was almost like a young Tony Robbins, and I was speaking at loads of events. I always had private clients. I was part of the kind of coaching network. And when I had this collision, I was hit by the car just over 4 years ago, now almost 5 years ago. And I realized, like, man, the gap between where I am and my greatest truth and potential is too big. There's a lot of changes I need to make in my life, one of which was to live at a place that I just had so much love for since the very first time I came here, like 15 years ago. It's the mecca of Muay Thai, Thai boxing, my main sport in my life. It's gone sunnier all year round, beaches. Oh, it just, it's the best. It's the best. But when I moved, and all of a sudden I became, rather than JP the coach on the stages, hanging out with everyone else, living life like everyone else, doing my best to shine in the model of what everyone else is doing. When I said, fuck you, world, I'm off to Thailand to live on an island and wear flip-flops every day. Bro, I lost Facebook friends. A lot of my clients just stopped contacting me. And for a long time, I questioned, like, what happened? You know, am I no longer relevant, etc.? But just lately, over the last few months, probably as a result of being friends with you and talking about things like content, I've realized, fuck, my life is amazing. You know, motorbikes, this fucking yoga during the day, massages, fitness, never step into an office. I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if people are like a little bit like, fuck JP, you know, I'm going to not follow him anymore. And maybe I'm wrong, like I said, but that's what's come up for me. I don't know if you've had the same thing with you or if you have anything to share on that, but yeah, people don't want to see you win when they know what winning looks like for them and they're not doing what it takes and they're still stuck in a 9-to-5 job or they're living in a place they don't want to live or in weather they don't want to experience. And not saying that cold weather is bad. I know people that hate hot weather, but you've got to do you. And that's what I realized that I was not doing. I was not living the fullest expression of who JP can be. And I'm still working on that. But yeah, anyway, what's your thoughts on that, dude? Because you said you connected with that. Do you think that you have people like that in your life? And what else do you have to share?
Very interesting. So yeah, I mean, on that, I would say, generally, I think people want you to do well, but they don't want you to do too well. Because your successes signal their failures and they're happy to see you post the odd thing, but they don't like to see it. They don't like to see you brag because it just highlights all the things that they aren't doing. And what I found is what I did find was when I first started, you know, posting content about me moving over here and just the fantastic quality of life, people I hadn't spoke with in years, you know, popped up to touch base and say life looked awesome. And I loved that because I had so many great connections. But then you do know that there are people who, you know, they react viscerally because the way that you live your life is an attack on the way that they live their life. And that's because they know that they aren't that happy with the way their life is going. And all I try to do is to try and feel compassion for them, because any sense of negativity they might have towards me and the way I'm living my life is a reaction to the unhappiness they feel about their life. And I can very easily see, I mean, it's very hard to connect the dots looking forward, right? But looking back, we can connect the dots and we can be thankful for the things that did and didn't happen. And there was certainly a time in my life where it seemed everybody was getting engaged and buying a house and getting into 25-year mortgages and, you know, in horrible jobs they hated, putting a little bit of money aside just to try and scramble together a deposit for a house. And then suddenly they're burdened. Their ability to be free is completely removed and they're just tied in and locked down and they're suffering. And there was a time where I suffered because I wasn't in that situation to do that thing. And then now I'm so thankful that I failed at the time to do those things. Because now I've got the freedom and the flexibility and the fun to live an incredible life here out in Thailand. So yeah, I've definitely seen it, definitely experienced it, definitely seen that the better life you live, the more threatened other people are. But I do just try and feel into the sadness and the frustration that they must feel that's evoking that. And yeah, just hope that those people that feel that way can just find peace.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful answer coming from such a compassionate place. And I guess for both of us, it's just to continue to do what we do, share the con excuse me, the content that we do, but in a way that the intention behind it, even though I know for you and me, it would never be, but being clear on the intention so that it isn't considered or looked at or perceived as bragging, and rather having a very clear intention on what's the message I'm putting here. You know, am I sharing something that's helpful, that's valuable, that's enlightening, that, you know, allows people to have some light shed into their lives? And to quote Marianne Williamson from her poem or book, Return to Love, I can never remember. I think it's a book. But she says, when we liberate ourselves, we give other people permission to do the same. So, yeah, maybe it's fine-tuning my content in a way that it's like, hey, this is what I've done. Maybe this will help you, as opposed to, I mean, what I've thought I've done is inspiring, but maybe, yeah, making hitting people in the wrong way, or maybe poking them in the ribs a little bit. I don't know. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey, dude. It's been a very interesting journey. Some people that I thought were ride or dies just left, and clients that worked with me every year like clockwork just were like, yeah. And look, maybe it's because I'm in a different postcode, so to speak. That's understandable. But yeah, we just keep doing our, we just keep doing the best that we can. And yeah, speaking of that, you're doing the best you can, living in Thailand, you're working on multiple projects, we're doing something together. But what has been the greatest thing for you, or the greatest things for you in making the decision to move to Thailand? And it doesn't have to be a deep answer. If it ends up being a deep answer, bonus.
Sure. So it's funny. The call to Thailand happened probably 3 or 4 months before I actually came here. And it just, the YouTube algorithms have got me. You know, the vloggers were coming up on my feed.
Yeah, by the way, Tripping with George. If you want to see someone that does it well, as in Here's My Life, just view it if you want to. Tripping with George is a great YouTube channel. I love your channel, dude.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate that. Yeah, the YouTube algorithms got me in their grips, and yeah, so it was just I ended up in this almost slipstream of inevitability where I was going to end up in Thailand. And it was tough because I'm blessed to have so many family members. I mean, I've got all my grandparents, right, which is just, unbelievable at
Wow,
my age,
that's
and I'm so
awesome.
gifted, and I've got so many friends. So many friends. I'm spoiled with the amount of friends I've got. So to leave all them behind was a very difficult choice. And there were certain rationalizations I had to make. I had to say, how many times would I see these people over the course of a year? And then I would say, well, I'm going to spend 2 months in the UK and I'll make sure I see those people for the same amount of time. So over the course of the year, I average out the same amount of time with my loved ones that I would have got even if I lived there. So there was no net loss to the actual
I
time
like that.
spent with my friends, with my family. And that was a useful rationalization. But in terms of why I came here, it's just for a better quality of life. I mean, the quality of life is incomparable, in my opinion. But about 7 years, I said every year, I decide I want to work for myself. I want to be like a digital nomad. I want to work for myself. I want to make money online. And then probably 3 or 4 years ago, I could have made the move. You know, if I had the balls, I could have got up and I could have done it. But for whatever reason, we lie. And I said, this was the last winter I'm going to spend in the UK. And I said it for like the last 3 or 4 years. And then in the winter of coming up to the winter of 2022, I was like, no. Last year was the last winter I am spending here because I am sick of it getting light at 8 and dark at 4:30 and being cold for like 5 months straight. I was done with it. And just, it was just too much, right? The UK had beat me down. The news cycles, the propaganda, the negativity, the consumerism, it was just too much. And so I came to Thailand. I came here with a return flight after 7 weeks. So I didn't intend to go back after 7 weeks.
As in
But
an
God,
open return,
it was
or
no, it was
7 weeks you were going back.
yeah, I had a
Oh,
booked
right.
return flight because I thought, let me come here for 7 weeks and then I'll go back for a bit and then I'll go somewhere else and then I'll go somewhere else and then I'll go somewhere else. So it wasn't a plan to move to Thailand. It was a plan to come here for a bit, get out the cold, go home, and then I'll go somewhere else. But when I got here, I was just like, wow, this is ridiculous. Why would I go back? I mean, friends, family, love them all. But in terms of the things that make up each component of your day were so significantly improved compared to the UK. It was indescribable to the point where every micro thing you look at was better. So when I get up in the morning, I wake up in a nicer place. And then I go and I have a nice swim in the swimming pool in the condo. And then I'll
In
go
warm
for
weather.
in warm weather, exactly, in beautiful, early 30s weather. And I'm walking around in December in t-shirt and shorts. And then, I'll walk to the coffee shop where I'm going to do my work. And I'm walking along like Sukhumvit Road. And it's like, wow, I'm in like this huge, giant Asian mega city. This is awesome. Then I go and I sit down in this intense, awesome coffee shop. And then I go and I get great food. It's ridiculously cheap and tasty. And then go to a nice restaurant in the evening. And it's like, oh, there was no part of my day that wasn't improved by being, in Thailand. Everything that made up the components of life was better. And I remember my cousin moved to Australia years and years ago, and I never got how he could do it. I could never got how he could get up and leave his family and leave his friends. I never got it. But he always said, just your quality of life improves when you leave the UK. And I didn't get it. Came here, intended to be here for 7 weeks. Then I got it, and I just didn't get on the flight back. And yeah, bar a little trip back to the UK last year, I've been here since.
I absolutely love what you shared about just working out the net time with your family, because being a coach for 20 years, I know many people that actually they want to live in a different country to where they're living. And that is because they say, oh, but my family are here. But if you actually work out how often you see your family, and let's say it's one weekend every month, then you can work out, okay, 2 days times 12 is 24 days. Just come back 1 month a year and spend more quality time with your family, as opposed to, jetting or stopping in for 2 days every month. This has been such an amazing conversation, dude. I want to be respectful of your time, and I also have some things to do, but we didn't even touch on things like the greatest life hack, the 4-hour work week, what that means actually. And it's not about working 4 hours, but curating a life and creating a life that it feels like you're only working 4 hours a week. Ram Dass, a great spiritual teacher. I wanted to talk to you about Wayne Dyer, which he actually, that was his quote that you mentioned before about Tony Robbins. It's one of my favorite quotes from Wayne Dyer. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. But no doubt we will do this again, maybe even share a podcast at some point. But for now, I'm very grateful for who you are, who you've become, and who you're becoming. I'm grateful for our partnership and our friendship, and for us building the Spiritual Gym together, which is an online community that's just changed names. And it now isn't way better than it used to be in the school community app. I don't know if you want to share anything about Spiritual Gym, but essentially, like going to the gym, I have been called the spiritual fitness guy, or I've been known about spiritual fitness. I've been known for spiritual fitness in a weird ways connected to spiritual fitness, but my friends have called me spiritual gangster for a while. So it's kind of this, fitness, the gangster kind of represents like the physical, the hustle. The spiritual obviously represents the spiritual. And I've been talking about doing reps in the gym, also not just in the physical gym, but in your mental gym and your spiritual gym. And now we've created an online community that I've ran on my own for 2 years. And now George is helping me serve more people and better. than I have done before by helping them be a part of a gym membership that's online, where you do reps on the physical, mental, and the spiritual, so you can have more wealth, health, and happiness, make more of an impact, do more of what you love, and be more successful and fulfilled. Do you want to share anything about that and any closing words, George, or how people can follow you?
100%. So yeah, the spiritual gym, really excited to work with you on that. And yeah, like you said, it's about getting those reps in when it comes to physical fitness, our mental fitness, and our spiritual fitness. And generally speaking, and you know, I can definitely recall my own story for this. Often we're strong in one area and weak in another. There was a time in my life I was very physically strong, very physically strong. I was lifting insane weights. I mean, I was taking out copious amounts of steroids. But I was a mental and spiritual weakling, right? I was a broke person, broke, you know, financially, broke mentally, broke spiritually, even though I was strong. And then other times in my life, you know, I've earned great money and I've let my fitness slip. So it's often hard to be strong or fit in all three of those areas.
It's easy to be successful in one area.
Yes, exactly. So, and, you know, we all know people that they earn good money and they hide the fact that they're fat and out of shape and insecure behind their wealth. And, you know, it's just a shame. So that's why we built this, obviously, the spiritual gym, so people can work on all three of these areas. And honestly, I think one of the biggest things that I've seen in there so far is that a lot of the time people know what they should do. You know, they can set their own goals. They can set their own non-negotiables. But actually doing it is another thing. You know, everybody probably listening to this, and even myself, if I even take the last 2 days, can look at the things I know I should have done and maybe I didn't do it. And just having that community around you to support you, keep you accountable, and keep you doing the things you know you should do, even when you don't feel like doing it, can be all the change in the world. So just having access to the information, the community, and the coaching to work on your physical, mental, and spiritual fitness. Yeah, really excited to work with you on it. I think it's going to be, yeah, really powerful for whoever joins. So yeah, thank you for letting me be a part of it. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you so much, dude. It wouldn't be where it is right now, ready to go in the next few hours, if not days, if it wasn't for you and for what you bring as a result of who you are, a very unique perspective in the way you work and your energy. And actually talking about energy, I often say to clients, you know, I might not even teach you anything new. What you're going to get from me is accountability and energy. And when you have accountability, even when it's in a group environment and you see other people smashing it and winning, you want to be one of those people. And when you are in an environment where you're surrounded by motivational and inspirational energy, you feel motivated and inspired. You know, it's okay to know what to do and not do it, because that's most people. Mm. But are you in an environment that's challenging you to stay strong when you're challenged, or when you're going through adversity, to give you the motivation to keep moving and to inspire you to never fucking settle ever? That's what the spiritual gym is. I have some rapid fire questions for you, dude. If you had to explain it to a 5-year-old in one sentence or one kind of paragraph, what is meditation?
Meditation is sitting exactly as you are.
That makes me want to go, tell me more, but I won't. Next question. What are the words spiritual fitness mean to you personally?
They mean to both be spiritually developed as well as developed physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Amazing. Now, in the spiritual gym, we have three pillars: physical gym, mental gym, and spiritual gym. Just which gym would you put this under? Journaling.
Mental.
Yeah, I would have said like mental, but also spiritual. But yeah, it's mental, because you're going straight to your thoughts. Meditation.
Spiritual.
Push-ups.
Physical.
Mindfulness.
Spiritual.
Gratitude.
Mental.
Hydration.
Physical.
I could keep going all day long. But just a little playful thing to give people a little bit more insight into what it is that we do in there. Bro, I appreciate you. Like I said, you're my spiritual brother from another mother. Look forward to our next conversation, which no doubt will be in the next few hours or tomorrow. Thank you for your time, everyone. Tripping with George, George Lambert. Look forward to bringing him to you again. Thanks so much for being here, dude. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Right back at you.